Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Columbus City Schools is addressing a budget shortfall by cutting more than 60 administrative positions, closing several buildings, and making some busing changes. Despite these moves, projections still show that if they do nothing, the district will be out of money by 2030. School leaders say rising costs, property tax changes, and reduced state funding have backed them into a corner. But at the same time, the district is investing in the future, with the expansion of career technical education classes to train the workers of tomorrow, and a new model to bring more college prep classes to more high schools. Joining us to talk about all of this and more is Columbus City School Superintendent Angela Chapman. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Chapman.
Thank you. Good morning, Amy. It's a pleasure to be here.
And for full disclosure, just from the beginning of the interview, I do have two kids in Columbus City Schools.
Yes, I love it.
So, Dr. Chapman, we'll talk about everything I just outlined in my introduction, but first we have to start with the news from yesterday. Dominion Middle School was under a lockdown yesterday after a gun was found in a student's backpack. Obviously, hearing about a gun in a school is concerning to parents, teachers, I mean, just about everyone. Thankfully, nothing happened with the gun. But how are things at that middle school this morning?
Things are much calmer today. Certainly, it's always unsettling to hear, to know that there is even a suspicion that a weapon might be in one of our buildings. And so we take safety and security very seriously in our district, and the team was very responsive. We rely on our students, our staff, our community members to let us know when they hear something or hear that there might be a weapon on campus or just the suspicion of it. And so that system worked. We say, see something, say something. And so our students certainly alerted us that there may have been an issue or there may have been something that needed our attention. And our team was very responsive to that. And so today, things are much, much calmer. We certainly have additional staff and resources on the campus to support our students, as well as our staff and families, if they have questions. And so we've been communicating with the families to let them know the next steps, and certainly will continue to be responsive.
And my understanding is that school officials detained the student, but that student eventually fled the building before Columbus police arrived yesterday. How did that happen?
So unfortunately, we were not able to. It's certainly a sensitive situation when students are not willing to follow all of the rules, and we have to certainly rely on our partners to assist us in situations like that. But it has been brought to my attention that the student has been identified and is certainly within police custody now, and so they have responded, and the situation is certainly totally under control at this point. And we are, again, have increased our security measures at the school, as well as support, because there's the physical safety, but there's also the emotional needs of making sure that everyone is calm and understanding the next steps and our efforts to ensure the safety of everyone on the campus.
So as of yesterday afternoon, evening-ish, the student had not been found. Columbus police issued a release that said that. So the student has been found now?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And that happened early this morning, very early.
Okay. Thank you for that news. Okay. So the juvenile will be charged with bringing a deadly weapon into a school safety zone. But that leads me to why the weapon got in. All Columbus City Schools, high schools, have metal detectors.
That's correct.
Do we need to have a conversation about metal detectors in middle schools?
So right now, I would say that's always a topic that's top of mind for us and thinking about how we expand layers of safety across the entire district. At the present time, we do have metal detectors or wands that are used randomly at our middle school sites. And so this is would be another area of opportunity and another significant investment that we can consider as we consider all of our future investments.
Metal detectors can't be cheap, right?
And then they're not free. Let's say that.
And then you need staff to staff them every day.
They certainly come at a significant cost. And you also need additional staffing to manage just the metal detector screening process alone. Obviously, if you install metal detectors, you need someone dedicated to that location, that entry point throughout the entire day to manage the software, the equipment, and so forth. And so that is certainly an area that we can consider for future investment.
So it is on the table. We could do metal detectors at middle schools.
We could if we decide that without additional revenue, we would absolutely have to decide what we would have to take out of the budget in order to allocate or free up resources to make that investment.
Have the metal detectors at high schools been successful? I mean, I don't know if you do you keep track of
that? So I would say by all standards, they have been very successful because they have screened or detected any attempts to bring in any type of weapon. And so that has been, I would say, a sound investment. At all of our high school campuses, we have over 21 high school campuses, a sound investment in our high school campuses to ensure, again, that they're layered measures of safety and security. And so in addition to metal detectors, there are other efforts that have been made to make sure that those campuses are safe and weapon free. And so that has been a successful strategy that, again, we're considering how we would make the necessary resources available to invest similar resources at other sites.
Do you know how many you have 21 high schools? How many middle schools do you have?
We don't have as many middle schools, but it's certainly, you know, significant when you think about, because it's not just the number of schools that you have. We have to think about the number of safety and security specialists that you would need at those sites, and then thinking about all of the investments that would come with purchasing that equipment and then installing that equipment at all of those buildings.
Well, back to Dominion from yesterday, Columbus Police, I'm sure, are dealing with this now, right? You've turned this case over to Columbus Police.
Absolutely. It is a criminal matter.
Right. And so, but do you know the gun that was in Dominion yesterday, was it loaded?
I don't have those details. Mm-hmm. Certainly, we know that whenever a weapon is found on or near our campuses, that is information that we immediately report to CPD and ask for their intervention and support. And they have been very responsive, prioritize any and all calls to our schools and respond immediately to, you know, intervene on our behalf. Our educators are trained and prepared to focus on instruction, not these types of incidents. We certainly plan for how to keep our buildings and campuses safe, but detecting and investigating what type of weapon it is, and those are, you know, that would we encourage them to focus on instruction.
So I'm guessing you don't know if the gun belonged to someone in the child's family at this point either.
No, we don't have those details. We just know that those are not the types of supplies that we expect for our students to bring to school every day. And so there absolutely has to be continued conversation in our community about gun safety and keeping guns off the streets and out of the hands of our young people. And so, you know, certainly as a parent and as an educator, the question top of mind is, how would a young person have access to such a weapon, right? How would you get access to that? And so as a community, we have to be asking ourselves that question and figuring out how we prevent that from happening again.
Yeah, as a parent, I found myself yesterday just saying, you know, what a world we live in, right? It's unfortunately, it's nothing new, but it just breaks your heart and makes you anxious at the same time that had to disrupt a school day.
Absolutely.
So just to end this part on, what message do you have about school safety that you'd like to share?
I would say that school safety, again, we take school safety very seriously in the district. There are several layers and measures of school safety at every school. Certainly, I don't want to disclose all of those measures mm-hmm. here today because that information is confidential. But I just want everyone to know that safety is everyone's responsibility. When we talk about how the community needs to show up in times like this, how our parents need to show up in times like this, ensuring that they're checking their child's backpack before they go to school and sending them to school with clear messages and expectations about safety, as well as all the layers of safety that our school staff, our principals, our safety and security staff, our teachers, our support staff, all the measures that they're doing inside the school, before school, during school, and after school to ensure safety. We encourage everyone, if you see something that's amiss or that's off or looks strange, say something. We have hotlines for families to call. We have communication. We communicate regularly with our local law enforcement. Whenever there's a concern, I want our family and our community to know that we are very responsive and work together with law enforcement to ensure that those issues are mitigated immediately.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Dr. Angela Chapman, Superintendent of Columbus City Schools. I'm going to transition now to the budget.
Okay.
The board passed several cost-cutting measures to plug a $50 million budget hole, but then projections show you're going to have to do it again, right? So this is a challenging spot to be in. Can you cut your way out of this?
So I would say, Amy, that this is a very pivotal moment for Columbus City Schools. We are continuing to invest $1.2 billion in resources and supports for students and staff. But despite that, we do have to make cuts. We've already started that process for this year in reducing administrators. We've made reductions. We're making reductions for staff, certified positions, support positions. We've also made changes to our transportation system to reduce the number of riders that we'll have next year. All of the cuts that we're making now will go into effect next year, but there's mm-hmm. lots of planning that needs to happen this year. Mm-hmm. And then we'll continue those conversations and continue to discuss what's next for the following school year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I would say that it's a pivotal moment. We absolutely have to be responsive to the financial projections, and we absolutely have to make some very difficult and disciplined decisions about how we respond to the financial forecast.
You cut more than 60 administrative positions. Some of them were through attrition. Others were actual cuts. A popular area of complaint is always the cost of administration. That's mm-hmm. something people talk about. Everyone always wants to cut administrators. I did look into the numbers for the administrators at the top four districts in Ohio. These are 2024 numbers, so bear with me on that, but it's the example I could find, right? So Olentangy has 151 administrators. Cincinnati has 303. Cleveland has 711. And Columbus has 388. Mm-hmm. So you have more, like a little bit more than Cincinnati, way more than Olentangy, but then compared to Cleveland, you're on the slim side. Mm-hmm. So do you plan to slim down administration even more in this next round of cuts? Mm-hmm. I mean, you're kind of, I don't know how many administrators is a good amount, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. and how do you decide that?
So I would say there's a couple of ways of looking at those numbers. One, we are always looking at ways to streamline and provide more support and efficiencies. But when I think about the number of administrators that we have, all of the districts that you mentioned are smaller than CCS. Mm-hmm. And so we think about the size of our district with 45,000 students. What we often do not think about is all of the operations that go into providing services for 45,000 students. Let's take transportation, for example. We know that we transport more students than any other school district in the state. We have more routes than even our regional transportation authority.
You have more routes than COTA?
Yes, we have more routes. Oh, and not only do we provide transportation to CCS students, we're also providing transportation to charter non-public students. Mm. So the operations infrastructure that we set up in CCS to deliver services, more routes, more students, not only for CCS students, we have to have the infrastructure for that. And there is not another district in the state of Ohio that has that type of demand for that type of infrastructure.
You're running a bus company?
Yes. Essentially, yeah. When we think about the logistics. But also, I want to name that there are also areas in our district that we have been able to add infrastructure and support to areas where we didn't have a need before. Mm. And so when we think about our whole child team, this is the team that manages and supports all of those whole child supports, nurses, social workers, school counselors. Years ago, we didn't have as many social workers. We didn't have as many counselors, mm-hmm. and we didn't have as many nurses. But when you stand up all of those whole child supports, you also need a team to support them. All of those individuals need to be evaluated. All of those individuals need professional development and support. And so we also have to be mindful that as the needs of our students continue to increase, the operational needs behind the scenes mm-hmm. continue. We need to be able to match those services. But I would say absolutely, as we continue to make reductions to the budget, we will absolutely continue to look at how we can streamline our services and supports. And any position that's furthest away from the classroom will always be our first look at how we can reduce expenses.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're going to continue talking about the financial picture for Columbus City Schools with Superintendent Angela Chapman. And we're going to talk about where more money could come from besides making cuts. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Columbus City Schools is the state's largest school district. The school currently has about 46,000 students in 113 school buildings and support facilities and employs close to 9,000 teachers and staff. At the helm of it all is our guest today, Columbus City Schools Superintendent Dr. Angela Chapman. Thank you again for being here, Dr. Chapman.
It's my pleasure.
So we have been talking about how you are going to cut $50 million. If we can briefly run through, you did make a decision about busing. The board debated busing a lot, cutting high school student busing altogether. They ended up tabling that issue. You settled on a plan that eliminates busing for K-8 students in non-100% lottery schools and students that attend a school that is not their home school. It sounds a little confusing to say it in words, but you have a flow chart. Flow charts don't really work, are difficult on the radio, right? But you're communicating this to everyone. But my question is, how much money does this actually save? Like, how many students will not have a bus next year because of this decision?
So I think it's maybe about 2,000 students mm-hmm. That will be directly impacted. When we think about the change, what the shift has done is that any student that's not attending their neighborhood school will no longer have a bus. But there are many exceptions. Mm-hmm. So if you're a student that's receiving specialized services, meaning special ed, gifted services, English language learner support, and those services are located outside of your neighborhood school, mm-hmm. we will transport those students to that school because it's a programmatic need, and we will make sure that they're provided transportation. This is a shift for us, again, to align our resources. We do not want to be in a space where we are over-promising and under-delivering. Mm-hmm. We know that we're continuing to experience driver shortage across the country as well as here in Columbus. And so we have to carefully manage the number of routes that we have, as well as the fact that because we didn't have enough drivers to cover all of the routes that we had, we've had to make significant investments in bringing on contractors mm-hmm. to help us cover some of those routes. And so this savings helps us reduce the number and the amount of contractors that we are bringing on to help us with our routing.
So you said it impacts 2,000 students, and I read somewhere that it's about $8 million.
Yes, okay. About $8 million in mm-hmm. savings for each year that we continue with this change moving forward.
So knowing that you have $8 million worth of busing happening, taking to kids to schools that are not their home school and not a special lottery school, mm-hmm. That makes me think a lot about enrollment in general. Enrollment in this district is all over the place. You offer a lot of choice in
yes,
the district,
we do.
Which I know a lot of parents love. I know those decisions were made for good reasons to have all of this choice. But is it too much choice?
I would say that most districts of our size have scaled back not only on the choice, but on the transportation that they offer to choice. And so we'll still have lottery schools and choice within the district, but parents will be responsible for providing the transportation. When you think about the number of miles and the distance from the far north end of our community to the far south end or east and west, and how wide and expansive our district is, it's really we're at a point where we're not able to provide everyone with choices all over the district. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of think of it as somewhat bonded autonomy, where you have choice, but it should be limited to your neighborhood, your area, or your region. And so you don't have students going from the far north side to the very far east side, because those are longer bus rides for the student. It certainly it's mm-hmm. more cost that we incur for operating buses that are traveling so far and for so long on the road each day. And so there will be different choices that our families will still have choice. I just want to remind us of that and double stamp that idea. But there will be different choices that they'll have to make about that choice.
Are you limiting the choice this coming up school year?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So, for example, families right now, the school lottery is open and families can participate in the lottery. And throughout the lottery process, there are several reminders. If you choose a school that is not a 100% lottery school, mm-hmm. then transportation will not be provided. But we have several lottery schools. And if you go on our website, it certainly details which schools are lottery schools, whether it's K-8 or 9 through 12. And families will still be provided with yellow bus service if they are accepted into one of those 100% lottery schools. So again, choice is still available within the district. Families will still have options, but those options will be limited related to if you'll get a yellow bus to attend those schools.
But that being said, there are some students who are probably partway through, maybe they're a sophomore or, you know, in sixth or seventh grade. They might have to switch schools if they don't get into the lottery at a new place, or if they're going to a school that is all the way on the other side and it's not their home school and it's not a lottery school, right? There will be some changes for some students.
There will be some changes for some families. And I would like to say that the majority of our students right now, over 50%, are not attending a school within their neighborhood. That's also a piece or a factor that complicates some of the challenges that we experience with transportation. So that many,
over
50%? Over 50%. So many of our students are being bused.
Wow.
And so when we think about, just operations for most of our districts, yellow bus service is not provided. When we think about our peer districts and our large urban districts, yellow bus service is not provided to families that choose a school outside of their neighborhood. We have been going above and beyond the state minimum in CCS by providing that service. And so that's an area of opportunity for us to consider how we make some shifts and reductions as we're facing budget challenges.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Superintendent of Columbus City Schools, Dr. Angela Chapman. The board made the decisions, the vote happened, the $50 million has been cut, and now we're needing to do another $50 million for the next school year. Have you had the conversation, the preliminary conversation, about where the next $50 million of cuts is going to come from?
So when we started the process this year, we first looked at operations and non-personnel. We made significant cuts in non-personnel. Those are our budget line items, resources that we would use to support operations. In addition to that, we looked at our operational areas to determine how could we operate more efficiently by reducing costs. And one of those costs was to make changes to who we transport in K-8 schools related to schools that are not 100% lottery. And so when we start the process to look at the next round of cuts, we will absolutely start with operations first. What are there non-personnel expenses that we can cut? Are there operational efficiencies that we could manage better or more efficiently? And then we'll be looking again at admin. When we look at our budget, when over 80% of your budget is staffing, you have to look at staffing. And unfortunately, that is certainly a harder pill for us to swallow because these are valued employees that have worked hard for the district and are integral to our success. And so we'll be looking, taking a very close look to see how we can. We always start with vacancies. So we're reducing a position that has been vacated by employee. An employee has retired, resigned, so that we can certainly minimize the impact on our current staff.
I'm assuming that when we talk about where you can find more money rather than doing cuts, you know, you're going to wish that the state would fully implement the Fair School Funding Plan and give you more money. You know, we've actually talked about that before, but you probably can't cut your way out of that. And probably the state budget is not going to change anytime soon, at least. But so I have to ask, are you going to have to go back to the ballot for a levy?
I would say that eventually, yes. All school districts do. The money that we receive from our ballot initiative for operating expenses is only intended to last 4 to 5 years. And so eventually we will. But the plan is to continue to make changes and make reductions with the resources that we have right now so that we can delay the next time that we have to go back to the ballot to increase our revenue. With our operating expenses, it's, again, over 80% of our budget is personnel. And so the only way to reduce those operating expenses is to reduce our personnel. And that's challenging when our enrollment isn't decreasing. So we still have the same number of students. Our families expect the same level of services. And so that makes it really challenging to do when there isn't a shift in what we actually have to deliver.
And it can't, I'm assuming it can't be all admin. I mean, have you talked with the teachers union about this? You might have to reduce teaching staff.
So absolutely. We're having these conversations very publicly, very openly as we talk about reductions so that everyone knows that we have to look at all areas of the organization and we're leaving no area of the organization untouched. Certainly, we want to do all that we can to protect the resources in the classroom because that's our number one priority. That's why we exist. We want to make sure that we have strong teachers in front of our students, strong support staff supporting our students and our staff. We know that we continue have to operate our buildings. We need, when our families walk up to the school, they want to see that the driveway has been plowed. They want to be able to be greeted by the secretary. They want to know that the custodian is working in the building. They want to know that there's a principal at the school. They want to know that there's a nurse available. These are all of the supports that every family expects to have at every school. And so it becomes a really, really challenging conversation to think about where can we reduce or where can we scale back.
You know, Westerville schools this past year did not have a levy. They passed an earned income tax to help pay for schools. Have you considered that instead?
I would say that all options are on the table. Certainly, we would have to work with our city and local officials to figure out what would be the best way to bring in more revenue, because we're part of an ecosystem in Columbus, right? There are lots of needs. When we go to the ballot, there's usually not only one issue on the ballot. Mm-hmm. There are multiple issues on the ballot. And so we also have to be thinking about what it looks like in terms of timing, how we are thinking about revenue. Right now, the legislature, there are lots of conversations about eliminating property taxes. Mm-hmm. And so that's our primary source of general operating funds. And so we're having conversations at the State House. We're having conversations locally in our community. We're having conversations at our board table about what are the options to secure a consistent recurring source of revenue to fund our schools. That's the question that we're all asking across the entire state of Ohio, and thinking about the best ways to ensure that we have revenue to do what we are designed to do.
Disproportionately from other school communities, though, I feel like Columbus has had a lot more talk about tax abatements than other communities will have. So there is money that you are not receiving because mm-hmm. there's buildings being built in the city that are don't have to pay taxes. Mm-hmm. Are you having that conversation with city leaders?
I would say that the conversations that we're having, certainly we have to consider everything. Everything has to be on the table. But as it stands right now, the way the laws are written, the school district doesn't really have a say-so on the tax abatements. Mm-hmm. And so we have to have conversations about what I would love to see a research or study on what we stand to lose when tax abatements are continuing, particularly in times like these.
What is the impact
that it's having on us in terms of loss of revenue and having a sustainable source of revenue to support our schools?
You do have a say, though. If one of the city council members has kids in the district, they can vote no.
Yes. So we certainly need to leverage all of our resources and think about how we can bring issues like this to the surface to explore how they can better be in service of supporting our community, supporting our schools. I certainly believe that this should be an issue that's top of mind for everyone as we have very public conversations about how we fund our schools.
You mentioned earlier that you're basically running a transportation system bigger than COTA, and you did have to pay a $10 million fine for not transporting some charter school and private school students. Are you still paying that fine?
So every year that fine is, it changes. It looks differently. And so what we have done is tightened up our communication with our charter non-public schools. Unfortunately, the law doesn't require them to notify us immediately when there's a challenge with the route. And so we've been doing more proactive outreach to say, hello, how are you doing? How are the routes going? Are there any concerns that we need to know about? Mm-hmm. Because if they report to us 3 months later that there's been a concern with the route, then we're fine for all of those days of services where there was a challenge with the route.
I'm guessing that happened. That's why you're using that example.
That happened, and that is a significant concern for us because for me, a practitioner, you would think if you have a challenge with the route, you need to know immediately. Mm-hmm. You can't sit on that concern and wait to tell us, and then we're fined for it because that money doesn't go to fixing the issue, right? So that's a bigger concern, and that's a greater challenge with how we're operating. And so we've been much more proactive. We do outreach. We do constant communication to make sure that the routes are operating as intended and there aren't any disconnects that we need to address. And again, when you have contractors, that you're working with, those are bus drivers that are not reporting back to our dispatch center. they're, you know, going back to their respective dispatch center, we have to strengthen the communication to ensure that there aren't any challenges that are overlooked.
There's lots of ways that communication can fall through the cracks there. Last busing question, since busing is such a big deal. In this next round of cuts where you have to cut another $50 million, is the idea of not busing high school students going to come back to the table?
I would say that it's certainly top of mind for us. What our board decided or voted to do back in December was to table the conversation for a later date. And they certainly established a transportation work group. And so we're meeting with CCS staff, are meeting with COTA. There's representation from the city. There's representation from MORPC. And they have a work group that will be meeting for the next year. That work group will be reporting out and providing updates to the board quarterly, but the work group will sunset in January of 2027. So they have a full year to work on several different scenarios and be able to report back. What would it look like if we shifted 100% of our routes or eliminated 100% of our routes to high school students for CCS and charter schools? How would COTA be able to support transporting our students to and from school? And so that will be the first step in looking at, that'll be the data and the information that our board will use to determine, well, is this plan work for us? Would they be able to provide the supports that we need at a level that would be complementary to the service that we provide, and then that would inform their next decision.
Basically, you need time to talk with COTA, right?
And yes,
because they can offer free bus passes to all the high school students, but that doesn't mean that there's a bus route that works for every high school.
Right. We're already offering free bus passes to all of our high school students, because not only do our students have transportation needs to and from school, but they also need to ride the bus to get to their job or to get to an internship or to get to another activity that they may be participating in that's not school-based. And so that's a service that we've continued to provide our students post-pandemic. But we need the data to know how long would it take for the students to get to school? Would they be there on time?
Is COTA willing to change a route or two, move a stop or something like that too?
Well, so I don't think that we're not going to be unreasonable in what we ask for. COTA is not does not provide yellow bus service.
Yeah.
So they're thinking about the needs of all of their routers and now adding, or all of their riders and now adding CCS. And so there'll be still the COTA bus is not going to go up into the neighborhood the way our yellow bus service does. And so we're just mapping out the existing routes near our existing high schools and looking at what the feasibility would look like if students were using COTA primarily for their routes.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the financial picture for Columbus City Schools with Superintendent Angela Chapman. And coming up, we're going to talk about what money is being spent on right now. Students, programs, new programs that are focused on careers and college prep. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This hour, we are talking with Columbus City School Superintendent Angela Chapman. And most of the headlines at Columbus schools lately have been related to budget cuts, building closures, and busing challenges. But in a recent address to her staff, the superintendent asked everyone to think about why they said yes to public education. She said that a lot is challenging and changing around us, But this work is not a job. It is a calling. And I want to say thank you again for being here today, Dr. Chapman.
Thank you for having me.
So in that speech, you said that you are investing in your mission and that you want to tell the whole story. So let's not talk about budget cuts anymore. Let's talk about what's happening. You have expanded your career technical education. It's called CTE. I was told you have 11,000 students in some form of CTE classes.
That's correct. And that is a significant increase. 3 years ago, we only had 5,000 students participating in career.
More than doubled. All right.
Yes. Yeah. Career technical education pathways. And so we have been responding to the interest and the demand from our students. Every year we have wait lists for programs. And so we said we have to do more to be responsive to the needs of our students and the interest of our students. Our students are very interested in career connected learning. That's real world experiences that are tied to jobs that they are interested in or career pathways that they are interested in. And so they get more hands-on experiences while in high school. They're more engaged. They are more passionate about learning about real world experiences. Mm-hmm. And so we've been responsive to that.
Yeah, your Instagram page has a lot of videos showing students learning careers, CTE classes, career technical education. Can you give me a couple of examples of one of like of a you called it a pathway, right?
Yes. So let's say yesterday I had a group of business and community leaders that joined us in the district, and they got to tour our pharmacy tech lab. And so this is a new lab that we opened on the campus of Fort Hays. And our students, because this program is approved by the Ohio Board of Pharmacy, students that are in this program, once they turn 17, they can work in a pharmacy. And so these are CCS students that are preparing your prescription when you pick up your prescription at the pharmacy. So this is a pharmacy tech lab. The students are learning and will graduate with credentials to become a pharmacy technician when they graduate from high school. But many of the students plan to graduate and go on to a four-year university and work their way through school. They can work, instead of having to work 5 days a week, they can work two nights a week in as a pharmacy technician while they're going to school to continue their studies. So just very excited about these opportunities for our students, and excited that not only when they graduate with a diploma, they'll graduate with a credential, real world work experience, a resume, and just it really opens so many more doors for them than before.
So this is mostly high school students in these?
So we have CTE programming that's starting in our middle schools as well. But these are high school students that are actually in the pharmacy tech program. There would be juniors and seniors. And so we have so many pathways. All of these pathways are aligned to the credentials and the pathways from the Ohio Department of Education and Workforce. But we have IT pathways. We have health sciences pathways. We have construction pathways, arts pathways, automotive pathways. We have advanced manufacturing. And so we are really thinking about how to prepare our students for the in-demand, high-skill areas that are available in our city and in our region.
I think I saw a video of a high school kid working on a car, right?
Yes.
Learning. Yes. That is a good skill to have. I don't even know how to change my oil. So.
Yes. It's a very good skill to have, and skills that will carry with them throughout their journey.
Another thing that you've been growing is you're working on a new model for college prep classes, and you're trying to bring it into more high schools. So I know right now, not every high school has the same advanced classes. So you're working to change that?
Yes. So for example, CTE, our Career and Technical Education programming, is usually for juniors and seniors that want to specialize in a career field. The career academies are a little bit different in that those are programming or pathways that's offered at the neighborhood school, and those courses begin as early as ninth grade. And so one pathway could be entrepreneurship. Another pathway could be business. Another pathway could be health sciences. And it means all of the core classes that they take English, math, science, social study will be taught through the lens of health sciences, business. And so it's another way to really think about the secondary experience or the high school experience for our students to make sure that all of the learning that they have, all of the courses that they have, are situated in real world experiences that help them connect to future career pathways that they may have an interest in.
I guess I misread or misunderstood the new model for college prep classes, because I thought it meant, you know, taking a class that got you college credit too.
So that's an option too, right? So we have college credit plus courses that are offered to students in high school. But the career academies is a different way of providing core instruction to our students. And so it's aligned to the pathways. And so these are, once they complete those pathways, they'll earn a credential. And so they'll graduate with a degree as well as a credential and experience. They will have the workplace vernacular, the workplace etiquette. They'll have workplace experience, and they will be able to compete in the job market for all of the high-skilled, in-demand career fields that are available in our area as well as in our region. And certainly when they graduate, they could choose to go right into the workforce, or they could become an entrepreneur, or they could go on to Columbus State through the Columbus Promise and earn a two-year degree, or they could go to a four-year institution.
I know I promise no more budget talk, but everything costs money. So I adding all these CTE classes, adding these college prep classes, I mean, that also there has to be an administrator who's hiring all these and making sure that there's a car for the kids to work on and that kind of thing. So I'm sure you've had to put money into this.
So we have. But I would say when we think about CTE and our Career Academy work, this is an area of growth and opportunity for districts across the state. Our governor is a huge proponent of strengthening workforce development through the lens of K through 12. I recently had the opportunity to meet with Governor DeWine and Director Dakin to talk about the expansion of CTE programming. They're interested in expanding this programming across the state. And so there's grant funding for that. And certainly I know that we've had lots of conversation across our community about our local industry partners stepping up and providing our students with the experiences. So and when you think about career academies and CTE programming, we can execute on the content, but we need our industry partners to provide the experiences for our students. And so that's not necessarily a cost to us or a cost to them. That's more mentorship and opportunities for our students to have that hands-on experience in the field with our industry partners. And so it's just reshaping how we provide that secondary experience for our students and asking our industry partners to step up and meet the demand.
So if lawmakers are not using the, you know, final 2 years of the Fair School Funding Plan, but you can get money from the Ohio government through grants. So you're coming at it a different way.
Yes. And so we are capitalizing on this moment, particularly where everyone is focused on workforce development. And so we want to be on the cutting edge of leading strategies as well as partnerships that make this happen.
In the address you made to your staff recently, you mentioned a whole list of priorities, and one of them was the need for modern school buildings. So does this mean fixing up old or building new?
It's both. So we know that when as a part of the last levy promise, we had an operating levy and a permanent improvement levy. The permanent improvement levy that our voters passed in 2023 was the first ever recurring source of revenue for CCS to invest in our fixed assets. We have never in the history of our organization had a recurring source of funding to fix our buildings.
You never had a maintenance fund?
Never!
Oh, dear.
So we had, it was.
That seems needed.
It's certainly needed, considering when we have so many properties. So each year we had to wait for an appropriation.
And you had to wait for something to break because you were...
Absolutely. So it was the run to fail model. Mm. And so now, certainly thankful to our voters, we now have a recurring source of revenue to continue to invest in our buildings and make those, invest in our infrastructure. But on the same time, we also have to be looking towards the future and thinking about how do we begin to stand up more segments of our facility master plan to invest in new buildings. The last time that we built a new building in CCS was in 2017. So that's almost 10 years ago.
Which one is that?
Columbus Afrocentric Early College.
Okay. And so I'm going to have to go visit that.
Yes, come by anytime.
Yeah. I want to see a new building.
We'd love to give you a tour. But 2008 was the last time that we had a bond issue to invest in building new schools in CCS. So that was 2008. And so we are long overdue for conversations, investments, to think about building new buildings. With a district of our size, if the average lifespan of a building is, you know, let's say 50 years, we should be building a new building every 2 years.
Oh, wow.
And so we're long overdue for that conversation as well as that need. And so we have to be thinking about where we are in that cycle so that we can stand up new buildings.
We're going to have to leave it there and dream a dream of new buildings. All right. We have been talking with the superintendent of Columbus City Schools, Dr. Angela Chapman. Thank you so much for your time today.
It's my pleasure. We continue to talk about what's possible and the investments that we're making. So when we talk about the cuts that we're making, that is not the whole story. We're continuing to invest $1.2 billion in our students, our staff, and our programming.
You've been listening to All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Amy Jurevich.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.